This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Amid recent national headlines of fraternities behaving badly, Dartmouth College has come up once again. This time, the allegation is of so-called branding. New members at the Alpha Delta fraternity, a group that's been in trouble before. The story first surfaced last fall, and in reaction, the college suspended the frat status as a student organization. Now, according to the Associated Press, a lawyer for Alpha Delta is appealing that decision, saying that the branding was a voluntary form of self-expression, like a tattoo or a body piercing. Whatever the outcome at Dartmouth, the story doesn't help the reputation of Greek organizations, and yet these groups remain popular on many campuses, with those involved saying these negative headlines are overshadowing what they feel is a very positive experience for students. Today in The Exchange, another look at Greek life. Let's hear from you. If you were a member of a sorority or a fraternity, let's get your thoughts. And if you didn't participate, how do you feel about these organizations and the role they play on campus? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guest for the hour is Andy Thomason. He's a reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education based in D.C. He's done a lot of reporting on this. Later in the hour, we'll bring in several other voices who've been involved in this issue. Andy Thomason, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for your time.
Laura, thanks for having me.
Well, every time there's a headline about a fraternity, the branding story, the racist chanting at an Oklahoma frat, repeated stories of sexual assault, and on and on and on, a lot of people are surprised. How about you? Are you surprised when stories like this come out, Andy?
Well, you mentioned the Oklahoma incident. Ever since March 9th, when the entire country saw this short video of a racist chant by the SAE fraternity out in Oklahoma, these kind of incidents have been surfacing, at least in the media, at a sort of an unusually rapid clip. And it's certainly, as somebody who follows this stuff, it's come up, you know, with an amount of frequency that seems surprising to me.
Well, and that's why we decided to do the show today. Mm-hmm. You're right. There does seem like all of a sudden there's all these stories. I mean, is it really that fraternities are behaving more badly today, or is it that people are more aware, or is it that everybody has a, you know, a smartphone that can record the bad behavior?
The smartphone, that's a really interesting element that you bring in, especially with that SAE incident. One of the things that made that so powerful was that the evidence that was presented immediately, and it was sort of indisputable, and that's what gave Oklahoma sort of the leeway to come in and act with such quick disciplinary force. You know, there was no fog surrounding that. It was very obvious what had happened. So the smartphone is part of it. You know, media attention, like I mentioned, maybe another element, and another might be maybe administrators are more willing to act or to speak out about incidents like this.
Given all the supposed focus, as we said recently, on corralling this behavior, and campuses have tried to crack down, why do these things keep happening?
Well, you mentioned in the opening of the show that Greek life is a very powerful force, and it's always been a mainstay of campus life. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the alums that get turned out of fraternities and sororities, you know, often end up in positions of power, or they become very reliable donors of the institutions they support. So the money element is a big part of it, and that's certainly one of the most frequently cited reasons for why these institutions keep getting stronger and more populous, like you mentioned.
So someone, a fraternity, may be in trouble, and a college may want to censor them in some way, but a couple powerful alums say, you know, don't you dare, I was a brother at that house.
That's a lot of what people have in their minds about this. Oftentimes it's more complex. Fraternities have a certain way of structuring liability, the national organizations do, to where it works out that effectively in incidents like, say, where there's an injury to, a particularly bad injury to a member, where the chapters themselves can be shielded and the national organizations can be effectively shielded and liability can come down on a personal level. So that's a lot of it.
Well, I definitely want to ask you more about the liability issue. Your colleague Eric Kelderman wrote about this too. But Andy, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now on the line is Professor Jay Walker. He's an assistant professor of economics at Niagara University. He's been crunching some of the numbers surrounding student outcomes at fraternities and sororities. And Jay Walker, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's interesting. You looked at the numbers on how students who are fraternity or sorority members and how they do academically and in terms of other measures like drinking and other health issues. So start with the academics. How do sorority members do academically compared to their non-sorority counterparts?
Okay. So we had data from a national survey of about 100,000 or so students. And for sorority members, at least on like the final graduating GPA, there didn't seem to be a significant difference between those who went Greek and those who didn't.
How about fraternity members, Jay?
Fraternity members, it did make a slight difference. It was statistically significant, but it was like, half of a tenth of a point. So like instead of a 3.25 on average, so for Greek members, you would think 3.25 for non-Greeks versus a 3.2 for a Greek member.
So just a slight lower GPA for fraternity members and no difference for sorority members.
Correct. Yeah, based on the sample that we had.
In terms of behaviors like smoking and drinking, what did you find, Jay, among students who were in Greek organizations versus those who weren't?
Okay, now that is something that coming in, you know, some of the prior papers that had looked at some of these same things, they had seen that it seemed as if Greek members did tend to drink and smoke more frequently. And that also showed up in the data that we have, that, yes, Greek members do drink more frequently. It does seem as if they're more apt to at least try smoking. But at least on grades, it doesn't necessarily come through.
And was that the case, Jay, for men and women, the smoking and drinking?
Yes, that is correct. For both, it was a difference where they might be more apt to drink more frequently. Correct.
How did you select the comparison group of non-Greek students in a way that makes for a meaningful comparison?
Okay, that was one of the things that, at least in some of the prior studies, we were hoping to improve upon, was that there might be selection issues. So, like, maybe some of the people who join fraternities and sororities do so sort of in anticipation of this behavior. You know, there's this common connotation that, well, I mean, it's probably already been brought up, like the Animal House idea, and maybe people are actually drawn to that.
So I like to party, so I'm going to join one of these. Yeah.
Yes. They join it in anticipation of sort of these behaviors. We used a process that was called matching, where we try to take students who have basically as close of background characteristics in terms of academics, home life, prior alcohol use, those sorts of things, and compare students who either became Greek members and those who decided not to become Greek, and then say that differences in outcomes would be the Greek membership.
I have a different question for you just based on this research, Jay. So let me throw this at you. Given that your research shows that members of Greek organizations have only slightly better graduation rates, for men anyway, slightly lower grade point averages, why is it that people who participated as college students in the Greek system often populate the top levels of American society? You know, members of Congress, high-level judges, top lawyers, presidents of the United States, when sort of academically anyway, it's no different than not being Greek.
Right. You could think of it as maybe there are some of those soft skills, I guess, that are cultivated that wouldn't necessarily show up in our study or those sorts of things, is these are the very students that maybe are more involved on campus. And that is something that we do at least find in our studies. Maybe there's an involvement, or some of the things that are sort of, you know, brought forth is what they do, what fraternities and sororities bring to the table is they encourage leadership skills and, you know, there's public speaking opportunities. And so maybe these at an early age may sort of carry on as you get out and move forward and into your career.
That's interesting. So for you as a researcher, what's the big takeaway, Jay Walker?
This is one of those, as an economist, you know, there's costs and I'd say there's benefit. You know, this is the one-handed economist sort of joke. I mean, there do seem to be positive effects in terms of, like, you know, graduation rates, graduating on time, which is, in, you know, sort of some students in recent years have been dragging out the four-year process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there are negatives also in terms of some of the health behaviors as far as, like, alcohol and maybe cigarettes. So I guess it's according to maybe each individual person, you know, so like there's an expected cost and benefit to this. And, you know, what may be right for some may not be right for other students.
All right. Well, Jay, thank you very much.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. No, thank you.
That's Jay Walker, assistant professor of economics at Niagara University. Again, he looked at some of the data surrounding Greek organization students. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Andy Thomason, I'd love your thoughts, too. I thought that was real interesting what Jay said about, you know, his pure hard data shows, you know, decent outcomes for students in Greek organizations, grades, graduation rates, that's important, you know, some negative health behaviors. And yet you do often see people in the top echelons of American society having been in sororities and fraternities.
Right. Well, sure, it's, you know, and to some degree it's self-sustaining. These, you know, fraternities have a long history, you know, having started as these rebellious groups on what were then all-white, all-male campuses. And, you know, their evolution over the decades has sort of hewed closely to, you know, the characteristics of people who, you know, have powerful positions in business and in government. And, you know, to some extent that becomes self-sustaining. And some of the points that he made, too, about leadership training are also definitely apt.
All right. In a moment, we will talk with a member of a Greek organization at Dartmouth College, and we'll take your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Knoy. Today in The Exchange, another look at Greek life on college campuses, given some negative headlines that we've been hearing lately. Let's hear from you. If you were a member of a fraternity or a sorority, let's get your thoughts. If you didn't participate, how do you feel about these organizations and the role that they play on college campuses today? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. We want your thoughts, personal experiences, questions, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. A guest for the hour is Andy Thomason. He's a reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He's been looking at this along with some of his colleagues. You can find links to their articles at our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And Andy, before we go to our listeners, let's get back to the liability question that we were starting to dive into a little while ago. I asked you why these incidents keep happening. You mentioned, you know, powerful alumni from fraternities and sororities are major donors, so there's pressure there. But untangle the legal liability issue for us a little bit more, please.
Sure. The best way to do it might be to give an example. So a national organization that oversees a fraternity chapter might pass down rules that basically say parties at this fraternity chapter, you know, have to have their own bartender or be BYOB, bring your own beer, bring your own alcohol. So basically what that might effectively do is a member who comes to this party, and maybe something injurious happens to him. He gets hurt. Any legal outgrowth or any legal complaint that might come from that, the liability could effectively be shifted to, oh, this person was underage. Well, we had a bartender who was supposed to be checking IDs, or oh, the chapter wasn't providing alcohol, so this outside person who was sharing alcohol, which was against the rules or parameters of this specific party, can be held accountable. So critics of fraternities will often say, oh, national groups are essentially making these rules, you know, out of self-preservation that really can come to haunt individual members who might end up feeling that they were thrown under the bus, essentially.
So the national chapters have these rules, and if an individual disobeys those rules, the individual is to blame and the chapter is blameless.
It can be interpreted that way, and you have, you know, these are risk management policies that a national chapter might say, well, we have risk management policies and these safety policies to keep people safe, but they can work out to where, you know, a member who violates them then is sort of, you know, can be seen to be left out in the cold.
What about the campuses themselves, Andy? I have read that some campuses sort of, they like the fact that the chapter is responsible or that the individual is responsible, and then the university can't be held liable.
Right. Well, I mean, look at you can look at somewhere like Dartmouth, who doesn't own the Greek houses. You know, they're off campus. And so, for the most part, campus police can't really, so I mean, you say there's an incident at a fraternity house at Dartmouth, campus police don't have full jurisdiction to go there in a way that they would a residence hall or a dormitory. That's one element of the liability, which is based purely in who owns the property.
All right. And again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Andy, again, I want to follow up on that in just a moment. But
sure.
With us now, since you mentioned Dartmouth College, is a student at Dartmouth College, Lexi Lynn, member of the Sigma Delta sorority at Dartmouth. And Lexi, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, when you came to Dartmouth, Lexi, how likely did you think it was that you would join a Greek organization?
Actually, when I came to Dartmouth, I was pretty against the idea of joining a Greek organization. It was definitely one of the things that kind of made me nervous about coming to this school.
Really? Tell us more about that.
All of what I knew about Greek organizations was based on what we see in movies and these kind of myths that it's a super party-heavy culture. And when I actually got to the school, I kind of discovered something very different. And something that has allowed me to grow a lot since I've come here.
So the reputation was not great. And then when you found out, when you got there, there was a different story. What was that story? What was it that drew you to saying, yeah, I like this?
I think in a large way, the Greek system here creates a social framework. So I think there's a huge diversity of people in the Greek system right now. I don't think it caters specifically to what we see as like the quintessential frat boy or sorority girl. So I think there is places within our system for a large diversity of people. And I found a place that worked really well for me.
People say that the friends they make in fraternities and sororities are friends for life. Was that part of the draw for you, Lexi?
I wasn't necessarily looking directly for friends for life, but I definitely wanted to make friends outside of my team. I came in as a freshman on the varsity rowing team, and most of my social circle my freshman year revolved around my team. So I was really looking forward to meeting people who participated in like various diverse activities across campus.
How do you and the other girls at your house react when there are all these headlines about Greek organizations behaving badly? What do some of the other young women there say?
It's definitely hard when we have these headlines that always paint us in a negative light, because we feel like a lot of the time it is an individual, and that individual doesn't represent the entire system. But in my house, we definitely agree that there are a lot of problems within the existing Greek system And we're personally working really hard to try and fix these problems and make it a more inclusive and safe space for everyone in it.
What are you doing to fix some of these problems? And what problems are you specifically focused on, Lexi?
So Sigma Delta is a local sorority. So that means that we can serve alcohol to people of age on campus, which is something that national sororities, did I say fraternity? It's a sorority.
It's all right.
National sororities cannot do because of national bylaws. So this allows us to have open parties to campus to kind of counterbalance a social scene very dominated by male social spaces. So right now there's 15 fraternities on Dartmouth campus who can all hold open parties open to the everyone on campus. And there are only 3 local sororities to balance that. And in a female-dominated social space, it definitely makes freshman women and other people feel a lot more comfortable because you're asking women for alcohol. You're in a space protected by women.
So this
changes that dynamic.
This gets to the concerns about sexual assault on campus in general, in fairness, not just at fraternities, but since that's what we're talking about. So a party thrown by a sorority house is going to feel like a safer spot for young women.
Yeah, and we actively reach out to younger women on campus and try and make sure they feel safe and know kind of what is expected of them when they navigate the social scene here at Dartmouth.
I kind of have an email here that I actually want to share with you, Lexi, because it's a question I want to ask you anyway. This is from Kara. She says, has it been taken into consideration that most who join Greek organizations have a decent amount of money, therefore good grades and graduation rates might be due better schooling in the past or resources to help them? What about the idea that Greek organizations are exclusive to those in the middle and upper class? I wonder if you see that.
I think that is definitely part of the problems we are facing right now. My sorority personally has been able to meet 100% of financial need the past 2 years. So if you cannot pay dues, we have a scholarship system in place that allows anyone to participate in it. So we haven't had to turn anyone away because of their financial situation, which I think is a really good step in the right direction. A lot of why we are able to do this, though, is because we are a local sorority. So national sororities have to give a lot of their membership dues to their national organization.
I see. So there's a real benefit.
Yeah, it makes the flexibility to give members the support they need a lot more difficult.
Well, Lexi, last question for you, please, and thank you again for taking time out. The other students that we've talked to about this issue have, to a person, felt like the media was really unfair to Greek organizations. I wonder what you think.
I would agree that the media kind of reaches out for these hyper-negative stories because this is a narrative the public has been interested in recently, seeing how the Greek system is messing up or creating these negative environments. I think at least here at Dartmouth, the progressive trend over the past probably 6 years has been one of a system's responsibility for its flaws and trying actively to change. So when a news article comes up that kind of portrays the entire system in a bad light based on the actions of a few individuals, it's really frustrating because no one cares to cover the kind of improvements that have been made throughout the whole system.
All right. Lexi, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
That's Lexi Lynn. Again, she's a member of the Sigma Delta sorority at Dartmouth. By the way, we did try to get Dartmouth officials and fraternity members on our program this morning to talk about these issues. No luck there, but it was good to hear from Lexi. I wonder what you think about some of her comments, Andy Thomas, and especially, the media, really unfair, jumping on all the bad news and ignoring the good.
Sure. I mean, we hear this, we hear this kind of criticism a lot. One of the things, that I should mention is that often the basis of what media decide to cover is, conflict-based. And so often, you know, an incident like, you know, will the most recent one I can remember, just yesterday, the University of Florida shut down one of its fraternities after allegations that a week and a half ago at their spring formal, members insulted a group of wounded veterans. And that kind of thing really, actually, Lexi mentioned it, it sort of captivates the public interest, right? And, you know, that's a common complaint that you hear about media coverage, and it's true that fraternities and sororities are quite active in philanthropy, raise a lot of money, and are very involved in charity. But the nature of media coverage often involves where is the conflict, where is the tension. That's where big stories tend to come from.
Well, here's a comment from Mary on Facebook. She says, quoting from an article I recently read, one recent attention-grabbing headline touted 30 frats shut down the past month as colleges respond to misconduct more aggressively. Mary says, while 30 sounds like a big number, please note that there are more than 12,000 chapters on more than 800 campuses in North America. She says, moreover, most of these chapters were closed by the GLO itself. I'm guessing that means Greek letter organization. Mary says the vast majority of fraternity and sorority chapters are behaving themselves. They are trying to be good students, contributing members of the college community while doing philanthropic service, living up to their fraternal values, and managing all the other things that come with GLO membership. Mary, thank you for the Facebook comment. The phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can post your comments on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. So it was interesting, too, Andy, to hear from Lexi. You know, she arrived at Dartmouth and she thought, I don't want to join this system. But then she learned a little bit more and decided to jump in. And she said it's been great for her. And we do hear that Greek organizations remain popular, may even be growing in membership. Why do you think that's the case, Andy?
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting question. And a lot of it has to do with, I think you mentioned in a question to her about the status, the economic status of people who choose to join. A lot of it also might sort of correlate to, you know, this popular narrative of a four-year college education now, which involves a lot of what colleges market is the experience of a four-year education. And students, you know, incoming students who are 18 years old, and they might look at, you know, this sort of paradise of a campus and say, you know, let's look at, you know, I want to be where the action is. And, you know, the social scene often, you know, and I'm just speaking of four-year campuses here, the social scene is often based out of fraternity and sorority houses, out of Greek life. And that's a very, very appealing offer for somebody who's coming, you know, who's just coming in, you know, and a whole college education in front of them.
So that if someone's going to choose a traditional four-year college, they really want that experience, and a fraternity or sorority offers that sort of classic college experience.
In a lot of cases, yes, yeah.
Some colleges, like Dartmouth College, from what I understand, the social scene is really tied up with the Greek system. Other schools, Andy, less so. What do you think accounts for the difference in those cultures?
Right. There's a very big difference in institutional profile. You know, somewhere like Dartmouth has a legendary fraternity system, and a lot of that, you know, has to do essentially with, you know, differences in institutions' histories. How were the organizations founded? Do they have particularly long histories here? It's also tied up with you know, who gets admitted to these institutions. Somewhere like Dartmouth has, you know, may have a wealthier class of people coming in, and you might see that play into the importance or the, you know, social capital that's given to fraternities and sororities. You know, somewhere else, maybe a newer institution, one that doesn't have a long history, you know, all the way back to sort of the beginning of American higher education, might look very differently.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us with your own experiences with fraternities or sororities, or your thoughts if you were not involved in this system yourself, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. www.freedomfighters.org. Here's a Facebook comment from Steve. He says, time to ban them. The Greek system, Steve says, consumes a student's time, taking away not just from academics, but from the intellectual and cultural experience at college. Steve says, derived largely from Southern traditions, resistant to changes overtaken society of the time, the Greek system are centers of white privilege and are sold as such. Future business connections, a middle-class lifestyle. Steve says the Greeks are often cruel extensions of high school cliques, lording over non-Greek students. Steve, thank you for the Facebook comment. Andy, I do wonder about the history that he references, derived largely from Southern traditions resistant to change. Is there a sort of whiff of the traditional here?
Well, I think, I mean, there is an element of truth to that. Look at the SAE chapter in Oklahoma, you know, this an incident where a racist chant was not the, you know, that incident was not one where it was one rogue member behaving badly. It was a chant that had been passed around at a national conference that was basically joking about the lynching of African Americans and denying them membership to SAE. SAE has its roots in the South, and that it's not the only fraternity to have that. The reader also I often hear comments like that, banned fraternities. Now, why do we have them? Why are they part of a college education? But he also referenced, their history of resistance, and he's sort of making the point that college administrators might have who are resistant to taking on fraternities, not necessarily taking them on, but taking bold action in trying to stop their growth or diminish their influence. They're a very entrenched and strong force at this traditional higher education. So it's not an appealing prospect to go after them.
All right. Steve, thank you for the Facebook comment. You can post your comment on Facebook or Twitter as well, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And coming up in a moment, we'll hear about fraternities and sororities at UNH. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, another look at alcoholism. That's tomorrow morning at 9. Right now, we return to our discussion about Greek life on college campuses, especially given some pretty ugly headlines about fraternity members behaving badly. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour is Andy Thomason, reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He's written a lot about Greek life on college campuses. You can find some of his reports at our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And joining us now on the phone is Marianne Lustgraf. She's director of Memorial Union and Student Activities at UNH. She helps oversee Greek life on UNH's campus. And Marianne, good to have you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Well, we were talking earlier, Marianne, about, you know, fraternities and sororities are a big deal on some campuses, less of a big deal on others. Where do they stand at UNH? How important are they?
They're an important part of student life on campus, but they don't control student life, if you will. About 10-11% of our student body belongs to a Greek chapter, and where they impact the campus a lot is not necessarily as a party culture, but they are the groups that are more likely to be out there holding different events for different philanthropies or community service and that sort of thing, as well as hosting different types of social gatherings.
So 10-11%, not very much. Do you see that percentage growing over time, shrinking, or staying stable, Marianne?
It's been growing significantly. Greek life came under the Memorial Union building about 7.5 years ago. At that time, it was about 6% of the student body. And right now, we are a little over 1,350 as far as the number of students that belong to Greek life. When we first had it, it was about 668. So it's doubled in 7 years. As
wow,
far as
that's a lot. That's interesting. Why do you think that's the case?
A couple of different things. A lot of it, the credit goes to the chapters, and a lot of it is the leadership of some of the people who work with the chapters, not just from our department, but from other places on campus. And they've kind of built a new way of looking at recruiting members. They're recruiting for quality as well as quantity. They have had a big impact, as I said, with community service hours, with philanthropic efforts. And we have a program here that's not totally unique, but kind of unique in the Northeast. It's called GPEP, which is a way that we benchmark chapters in various areas like intellectual development, membership development, community service and philanthropy, accountability, risk management, and then lastly, in community and campus involvement. And the chapters have certain benchmarks that they must meet each year in those areas, and then they compete against one another for the higher rankings. And we've seen academic grades go up over this period of time, the amount of money being donated, the community service, the student involvement in campus. A lot of our chapters have a 90% involvement in other community or campus organizations.
So it's an attractive profile for students coming in.
Exactly.
You know, we've done a lot of shows, Marianne, on the trend of parents being more involved in their kids' lives, worrying more about their children. I wonder if the growth is partly an offshoot of that, of parents kind of feeling nervous about their kids being on their own on campus and like the idea of them being in a house and having somebody kind of watching over them.
Well, less than half of our chapters actually have physical houses. A lot of the chapters do not have facilities here on our campus.
Interesting. They're social organizations, but they don't have a house.
Uh-huh. Right. Some of them do, but a lot of the chapters that we've added over the past 10 years or so do not necessarily have a chapter facility. And so, you know, their focus is in all the other activities and being a part of campus overall. We have a great program here on our campus as far as housing and residential life, and we guarantee that students can have up to 2 years in the halls. And the residence halls, of course, are then encouraging the students to get involved in other activities and other things on campus. So on some campuses, yeah, if you want decent housing, you go to a Greek chapter,
yeah.
But that's not necessarily the case here. But the parents do really question us hard at orientation and other things about Greek life.
So some of the students involved in these organizations are living in a traditional house, and it sounds like many are also living in the dorms or other university housing.
That's true. And even our chapters have grown so much that in many cases, those that do have chapter facilities, especially the sororities, cannot house all their members. Our average size of our a Panhellenic sorority right now is about 138 members.
Uh-huh. You know, Marianne, a question that we've talked a lot about earlier in this hour with our guest, Andy Thomason, is this question of liability. And, you know, this has been getting difficult on other campuses. You know, when something terrible happens, you know, a fraternity member gets drunk, falls out the window. I mean, it's unbelievable how often this happens, actually. And then, you know, the parents, understandably, are terribly upset. So who's responsible? I mean, is it the university? Is it the individual who served that person alcohol? Is it the chapter? Is it the local house? I mean, it seems like everybody's kind of holding this at arm's length and saying it's not my fault.
I would say that there are four parties that are at fault if there is something that is seriously wrong with the infrastructure of that chapter. And part of that is, of course, the chapter itself. It's their national headquarters, and all of our sororities and fraternities on our campus are affiliated. We do not have any locals. The alumni and the university is a table, and there's four legs, and all four need to be working together to ensure the success of that chapter and holding it accountable as well as helping it grow. And so there are unique situations that happen all the time, and there are knuckleheads everywhere, you know, that get themselves into situations that are unfortunate. But if you have those four people being honest brokers, working hard with one another to be in support of that chapter, then hopefully you don't have those types of incidences. But if you do, everybody has a hand in it, and that's why you develop the social policies. That's why you develop the risk management policies and things like that, so that you know, the students know what they are accountable for. And if they follow those, then their national headquarters insurance will we'll support them, you know, and that sort of thing. But if they aren't following those policies, then yeah, they do have a problem. If they aren't following university policies, then they have a problem, and it really does become a chapter's decision to not necessarily, you know, follow the protections that are out there for them.
You know, we've heard a lot about fraternities at Dartmouth, and again, we were unable to get some of those folks to talk to us today. Have you guys ever had to shut down a fraternity or a sorority, suspend a chapter's operations on campus?
Yes, we have. Over the past several years, we have probably lost five fraternities. All but one has come back. Because there is one that failed our GPEP program for 3 years in a row, and so we worked with the headquarters, and they said, "Give us a 3-year break, and we'll come back, and we'll reformulate with, you know, with new members and that sort of thing." But for risk management, we've lost a number of chapters over the years, and usually our status is you're gone for 4 or 5 years, and this is working with the national headquarters, and then yeah, if you meet our requirements for being recognized again, we'll work with you to start all over again. And some of those chapters, when they've come back, have turned into just the stalwarts of our campus, as far as, you know, living up to their values and acting on those values.
Okay. Well, Marianne, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
That's Marianne Lustgraf. She's Director of Memorial Union and Student Activities at UNH. And as we heard, she helps oversee Greek life on campus. We want your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Andy Thomason, back to our listeners. A couple emails have come in, and let's go to the phones. Garrett's joining us from Barrington. Hi, Garrett. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hey, I just wanted to call in as somebody who attended the university and, you know, saw and bore witness to, you know, fraternity life and all that stuff. I mean, they're sleazy joints. Everybody knows that. It's you kind of know that going into it, and I think that there's two things here that need to be taken into consideration. One, it's anybody who does anything that's against the law or perpetrates some sort of act against, you know, a female or, you know, like you said, jumps out of a window, that's an individual's responsibility. That's their wrongdoing. That's their haphazard behavior. And the other part of it is education. I mean, don't be going places and being under the influence in general, but furthermore, at a place that's of ill repute. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, why are we holding individuals accountable for this sort of behavior? Because this stuff happens outside of those places.
Well, yeah, it's a great point, Garrett. And this has definitely come up in these cases, Andy Thomason. You know, you could blame the fraternity for hosting the party, but you could also blame the individual. No one made him or her, you know, drink the punch.
Right. The caller brings up an interesting issue. It's worth bearing in mind, and this goes back to what Marianne was saying, is that we're talking about, you know, 18-year-olds who are, in every sense of the word, impressionable. And if they're looking at, you know, the prospects of living in a house where there's a party every weekend and you know some illicit behavior is going on, I think that one criticism of the fraternity system might be that essentially it's unfair to condone a system where an impressionable 18-year-old might bear some personal responsibility for, you know, something tragic that happens, you know, at that age, with some involvement from this big system.
Well, that's the question, right? In loco parentis, is that what they call it? Like, who's responsible?
Yes.
Who's serving as a parent in that situation? Or is the person, as our caller says, 18 and, you know, again, you're making the choice?
Right. And I think one of the things about being 18 is that, you know, somebody, some relative or somebody might have told you that, you know, going crazy is all part of the college experience. But that advice, you know, that idea is going to look a lot different if you're facing, you know, criminal charges, legal liability.
All right. Garrett, thank you for calling in. Bunch of emails have come in, Andy. I just want to share some of these with you. This is from Kathleen. She was a member of Phi Beta at Ohio State University in the 70s. She says, OSU at that time was a very large campus, so Greek life made the university feel smaller. She says with the help of nearby alumni, we were able to increase the grade point average, community service, leadership training. She says my involvement in Pi Beta Phi was critical in developing social/soft skills. Kathleen says, my four adult children chose not to participate in Greek life. They felt they were too party-oriented, but she says her kids all went to smaller campuses. So, Kathleen, that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. Mike in Springfield says they are elitist, and the incident last week of fraternity members from U of Florida, I think, spitting on members of the Wounded Warrior program when the two groups were at a resort in Florida exemplifies the superior attitudes of some of the members. Mike says, I wish they would publish the names and addresses of those frat brats. That U Florida story really got a lot of people upset, and understandably so, Andy.
It did. It almost, I mean... The elements of that story, it would be hard to engineer a more headline-grabbing story.
Although the Oklahoma one, that comes close. That was
that's true. But, you know, in the Florida one, you have a case of, you know, this fraternity is sharing this resort with these wounded veterans. They end up, you know, allegations that they spit on the veterans, threw beer at them, did other various vulgar things. That one was shocking, shocking to read about.
Well, thank you for the email. And here's another email from another former sorority member. This is Marie in Antrim. She says, I loved sorority life. I learned leadership skills, participated in charity events, made lots of friends. While alcohol was an issue on campus, I found it much safer to go to a sorority party or a party co-sponsored with a fraternity. Being a sorority member helped to curb alcohol abuse as we all looked out for each other. Marie also says, one thing I'd like to point out is that every chapter has its own personality, just like people do. Just because one fraternity / sorority does something doesn't mean all do. To condemn the system is short-sighted. Andy, I'm guessing you've heard that comment from a lot of people after some of your reports come out. You know, don't condemn the whole system for the actions of a few.
Oh, definitely. And people who make that point are also sort of quick to point to the chapters or systems' charitable footprint and to say, look at all the good that's going on here. But one of the readers brought up an interesting point that isn't quite addressed by that idea, which is that the system's exclusionary nature, is that something that higher education should condone? I mean, the most memorable example of this might be last year, the stories out of Alabama that the sororities there had sort of unofficial way of rejecting black women who wanted to be a part of those sororities. And, you know, a lot of people look at the mission of colleges and what they've become in our country and saying, you know, Greek organizations are looking more and more like a relic.
A relic of sort of past segregated times.
Right, or, you know, more where institutions were, where we were fine with institutions being more exclusionary.
You know, it does raise a question in my mind. On some of the bigger campuses that I'm familiar with, it does seem like there's the black sorority, there's the white sorority, same with fraternities. Sometimes there's even a Jewish-oriented fraternity mm-hmm. or sorority. But this was a long time ago. I mean, does this persist, Andy? Is there still the black sorority, the white sorority?
Well, there are historically, you know, there are historically black fraternities in particular that sort of rally around, you know, celebrating African American culture and making that a defining aspect of their membership. Yes.
Okay. Is anybody talking about, you know, we shouldn't do this anymore, or
not that I've heard as it pertains to historically black fraternities?
All right, Andy, more for you to look into and some of your reporting.
Right.
Thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Andy Thomason, reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He's based in D.C. Andy and his colleagues at the Chronicle have been looking a lot at Greek Life on Campus. You can look at some of their articles on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Dylan Morrill. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.